Good morning and welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. My name is Rita Schulte and I'm sitting in today for David Inge. A little business up front, the producers for Focus 580 are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Our technical director is Jason Croft. As always, we invite your calls as we speak with our guests this hour. The number is 333-9455 or toll free 800-222-9455 if you're calling long distance. With me today are two former Champaign-Urbana residents, Beth Finke and her companion, Hani. Beth is a former resident of Urbana, and she's back in town this weekend to promote her newest book, Safe and Sound, and she's here with Hani, who is her companion animal and her guide dog.
Hello.
Hello. It's so exciting. It was fun to set out in the lobby and watch. This woman is getting phone calls here. Her people are calling our people.
My people are calling at WILL. Yep.
And it's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
And I understand your first interview, maybe not your first, the first one I'm aware of, was your original book, Long Time No See.
That's right.
And today we're talking about a brand new book for a completely different audience. And that one's called Safe and Sound.
Yep.
And tell our audience a little bit about Safe and Sound. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
About it.
It's a children's book for kids ages 4 to 10. My first book, Long Time No See, was a memoir, and I was fortunate enough to go all over the country to promote that, and I gave speeches everywhere and presentations, and I really enjoy it after the presentation when we do the question and answer period. And when that would come up about Long Time No See. Now, I should say Long Time No See is about me losing my sight. My husband and I have a child with a significant disability, getting a guide dog, staying married. So then question and answer, they'd say, can the seeing eye dog know red and green lights? How long did you train with the seeing eye dog? The seeing eye dog. And I finally decided,
it's really all about the dog.
Yes. So give in. Yeah. So I and also, actually, I started looking for a book I could recommend at these presentations when people had all these questions about seeing eye dogs. And there are some books that are out there, but none of them were, in my mind, quite right. Mm-hmm. So I decided to write my own. So this is a book in Hani's point of view. It's written from the seeing eye dog's point of view about her job and how it's difficult and how she doesn't always like it, but she does it because she knows she'll keep the two of us safe, and it's important to have a job where you're helping others. And I was hoping children might learn about seeing eye dogs and also get the idea that it feels good to help other people.
Well, that's a pretty good reason to write a book.
Well, thank you.
I think it's a wonderful moral to the story, the You See Timmy, as people always used to say. You remember
Timmy,
Lassie,
yes,
at the end, You See Timmy.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I would have to admit that as probably a lot of people with the red light, green light question, I am on the staff of a 7-pound cat.
Oh.
And so
they
say dogs have love relationships, cats have staff. And that's true. So I do not have any idea about how dogs communicate with people when they're working. How do you select an animal for what makes someone take a look at a puppy and say, this is going to be a great dog for somebody?
Well, I got my dog at the Seeing Eye School in Morristown, New Jersey. There are about 12 schools in the United States that train dogs to be guide dogs. Most of them, almost all of them, breed their own dogs. Mm-hmm. So it's been years and years and years of studying and science and research. And at the Seeing Eye, they tend to train, I'm going to get this right, Golden Retrievers, Labrador Retrievers, and German Shepherds, mostly because, first thing, they have to be big enough to pull you around. They're literally, you're holding onto the harness and they're pulling you.
Oh.
So it has to be a dog that has a really strong, what would you call it, chest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then they have to be dogs that are friendly, maybe not too friendly, but dogs that can get along with a lot of people and be in situations and not freak out, frankly.
Yeah.
And they have to be dogs that can be trained.
Mm-hmm.
To do this kind of work. Now, Hani is a mix of a Golden Retriever and Yellow Lab. So they're starting to mix the dogs a little bit. And they're also starting to work with boxers.
Really?
It's because some people who are blind are also allergic to dogs.
Oh, I never thought
so,
about
yeah,
that.
So boxers are, they have shorter hair, fewer allergies, and they have teeny tiny tails that won't get stuck in the car when you slam the front door.
Oh, that sounds like an experience.
So how they choose, the puppies are bred at the Seeing Eye, and so they do a lot of scientific research on that. But for the first year, they live with a family, a volunteer family. That raises the puppy, and basically they follow some rules, but they're not teaching them right and left and forward and watch out for cars and that kind of thing. They're just teaching them the kind of stuff anybody teaches their puppy, house training them, having them to sit still under the table, but also getting them used to social situations, bringing them everywhere.
Wow. Okay.
And then after a year, they go back to the Seeing Eye school and get tested physically to make sure they haven't developed any bad bone issues or they get a lot of infections or something like that, and also for their temperament. And so a lot of the I think about 45% of the dogs make it after that, and the rest of the dogs get adopted out
as pets.
I
want to invite our audience to give us a call again. Our number is 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 if you're calling long distance. With me today are Beth Finke and her companion, Hani. And one of the things that I thought was very, very interesting is when Hani, you and Hani came in the building today, you went up the stairs.
Yes.
And I thought that was very brave of the dog. Do dogs... Are they comfortable with stairs?
That's a good question.
Complete ignorance about dogs, period.
Good question. Stairs are difficult, but she's a seeing eye dog and she has to go up and down stairs. Actually, from just the feel from the harness, I think going downstairs is harder for her. If we come to the top of a flight of stairs, she has to stop. And when she stops, I feel with my foot to see where we are. Here's an example. I took the train in last night, and we got off the train, and she led me around. I really didn't know exactly where to tell her to go right or left to get to the staircase.
Right.
But she was pretty confident, so I just followed her. And she stopped, and I felt with my foot, and I couldn't feel anything there. And a man was next to me. He said, "She's at the elevator." I guess she wanted the elevator.
She preferred the elevator.
But the stairs can be difficult. Now, I'm living in Chicago now, and we got these booties at the Seeing Eye. They gave us booties for the winter.
For the salt, yeah.
For the salt, exactly. And so one time there was a lot of salt last winter, and I put booties on, and she didn't like them much. But we got to a flight of stairs. That's not that complicated. Rather than cross State Street on my route, I go to the State Street L. I go downstairs. I go underneath this State Street, and then I come up on the other side. So I got to the top of the stairs. And she had those silly booties on. And she took one step, and I took the booties. I mean, it's hard enough for her to go downstairs, but then she was slipping,
with little things on,
on
your feet.
Yeah. So I was given the option here of elevator stairs, and I chose stairs. Mm-hmm. We need the exercise.
Oh, there you go. Well, she looks very fit.
Thank you. She's talking about me.
No. Yeah, well, they both look very fit. They're looking good. So when you decided it was really all about the dog.
Yes.
And you sat down to write this book. What is it like writing a children's book? Many of us have had children, and just to tell a story, to try to edit it down so that you're not talking down to kids, but you're on at a language level and at an understanding level. What was it like trying to bring this whole situation into their little orbit?
Oh, that is a very good story. A good question. My first go round, or actually, but my first idea was to write a book about a dog that didn't like her job very much and didn't like being a seeing eye dog, but did it anyway, but really wondered why all the other dogs were playing Frisbee while she had to work. And it was called Long Time No Pee. As after my first book, Long Time No See, because seeing eye dogs have to wait until you take their harness. They don't get to just scratch on the door and say it's time to go. You take them out every 4 hours. You have to take their harness off. You tell them it's time to go, and they go. So, well, that didn't go far with publishers, but it was my first
I'm imagining the publisher looking at the title going and a crabby seeing eye dog,
right?
Not
it just
working for me.
Yeah. And it was fiction. It was about Julian Wags, the dog that didn't like, you know. Okay, that was that. So then I decided to write it. Well, one of the publishers did show interest, but said it had to be written it had to be true about me and my seeing eye dog. And so that's when I sat down to write it. And frankly, I did write the first one. I did kind of dumb down too much, and I got a lot of help from the editor, who reminded me to use more difficult words,
mm-hmm.
because part of the thing about kids is that's how they learn more difficult words.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think here's, I said, it's in Hani's voice. So she said, Beth puts on my harness, and they had me change it to Beth straps on my harness. There was a lot of that mm-hmm. that went on. So
yeah.
I wrote the story in a day. But it took about a year back and forth to get it right, and the mm-hmm. publisher was a huge help.
Well, for the benefit of those who are not in the studio with the book, I can tell you that it's lush.
Mm-hmm.
The illustrations appear to be oil paintings, oil sketches.
Yes.
Off, you know, kind of it's something to definitely take a look at, and we'll tell you in a moment how you can take a look at the book, and. It's very realistic. I mean, you see Beth and her dog, and they're walking around chairs. They're walking down city streets, and people are looking at the dog and smiling at the dog, but they are not touching the dog.
Yes.
Because there's rules,
That's
as I understand.
Right.
And the rules are, we don't talk directly to the dog
yes.
when she has her harness on. We do not address her by name.
Right.
We don't pet her or because she's working.
Right.
And there's another rule I forgot.
Don't
feed her.
And most people don't try to mm-hmm. feed her, although it's been, and those are all the rules when her harness is on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you know if a seeing eye dog is working. But if their harness is off, they're fair game. So people who come to visit me at home, well, I still don't want them to feed her, but you can play with her. It's
mm-hmm.
not, you know, some people think these poor dogs are never have any fun, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
And on the occasion, if I'm going somewhere and there's a fenced-in area and someone who can see is with me, I can let her run around in the
mm-hmm.
fenced-in area. I don't do that on my own because I don't know what kind of trouble she might be getting into, or she might be eating stuff in the yard or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The eating thing is very important, just that if she gets sick from something, and I don't know that she ate something bad. You know, I need to keep track of what goes in
eating?
And what comes
mm-hmm.
out and all that. So, yeah.
That makes sense
mm-hmm.
in a way. I mean, it's just good pet ownership.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
In a lot of ways.
And right, for any mm-hmm. animal, a companion animal. Mm-hmm. And then if she gets sick, then I can't go to work. And, you know,
right.
it's very important.
Mm-hmm. And she, the tone of the book is wonderful. There's this just on this one picture where they're walking down the street, Hani is saying, "We live in a busy city. I pay close attention when I'm working. When my harness is on, I don't stop to eat or sniff or even roll over to scratch my back. I do all of that at home before Beth straps on my harness or after she takes it off at night." And when you think about what a dog's life is like, she doesn't get a chance to stop and check her messages
yeah.
while you're out.
No.
So she has to catch up other time.
She is a workaholic.
Mm-hmm. I guess she is.
Yes.
But on the next page, it doesn't sound like you're such a slouch.
It
says, "Beth works too. She's a writer. We travel together to all sorts of places, government meetings, award ceremonies, music concerts, and baseball games." So when you tell us that you haven't dumbed this language down, politicians is not the sort of thing you would find in a storybook.
Right, I get that's right.
You know,
yes,
but it goes on like that in that wonderful voice. The dog has a lovely voice. It's not choppy, so it's just a beautiful thing to look at, and it's a lovely thing to read out loud.
Well, thanks.
Because it's got nice rhythm to it. It's a lovely job. You and your editor should be complimented on the job that you have done.
Thanks
and
so much.
And we have a caller.
I will put my headphones on.
There you go. The drama
yes.
of live radio.
Okay.
Right here.
All right.
Okay, line number one in Champaign. Hello.
Tell me where the book can be bought.
Okay, we'll do that. Today, in fact. Or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Well, you can buy it today.
Mm-hmm. But tell them where.
Okay. I'm going to be at Jane Addams Bookstore in downtown Champaign. It's on Neal Street. I don't know the exact address. But from 2 to 4, I am going to be signing books. I'm going to be brailing my name into books. And we will be rubber stamping Hani's paw print on every book sold there. So I'll be there from 2 to 4. The book is available there already, so you
mm-hmm.
can go and get it. It eventually will be at other bookstores, but the distribution's mm-hmm. been a little slow. But you can go to any bookstore and order it
mm-hmm.
or order it online through all the normal channels.
And if you're not from Champaign-Urbana, the address for the Jane Addams Bookshop is 208 North Neal. It's in the downtown portion of Champaign.
It's a terrific bookstore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lovely little bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, loaded with all sorts of wonderful things, and you'll just enjoy being there, much less enjoying the signing.
And here's a little secret. They're serving cookies tomorrow between 2 and 4.
Sweet cookies. And that's not all. You'll be able to meet Beth and Hani.
Yes.
Excuse me, at the Children's Department at the Urbana Library in downtown Champaign between 11 and 11:45. And you can go and learn about the service of guide dogs and how they help people who are blind, as well as visiting them at the Jane Addams Bookstore again tomorrow from 2 to 4. Copies of the books will be available for purchase there. If you can't make that, I'm sure they will still have a supply after, and you can order it from any of the other bookstores here in town. But yeah, stop by tomorrow and get a chance to meet these lovely people, this lovely person and her lovely companion. Just don't pat her.
That's right.
She's working.
Or else I'll push one of these books in your hand and say, read this thing.
And that's, you know, I think that people are always pretty awkward.
Yes.
And I think, I don't know whether it's just the shock of the different or just people don't know how to approach people who are challenged in any way at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's a comfort level that's just not there. And I don't know whether that's anything people generally will ever overcome. But it's the kind of thing that I think Safe and Sound will help, because I think you have to start with children.
Yes.
When they're young.
Yes. That was part of the idea of writing it. And people are awkward. I will say, you know, I used a white cane for 6 or 7 years before I got a dog, and people were much more awkward with the white cane. People just wanted to stay out of my way, and probably for good reason, because I wasn't very good with that cane. But with the dog, I'm more approachable, but there's still some... I think most people just want to do the right thing.
Yeah,
and they don't know. Do I talk to the dog? Do I not talk to the dog? Do, you know, it's not a... I don't feel like it's evil. It's just people want to do well, or they want to be good.
And yeah.
So that's the kind of attention I get now with the dog. I wanted to talk about the illustrations.
Yes.
Just that it was kind of an interesting way, this one about the publisher chose the illustrator. And so the illustrator called Mike and me, my husband Mike Kinsey, and asked if we'd send photographs. And so we sent some electronically, and he said, just anything you've got, send it up. And he asked Mike to take certain shots of me, you know, doing whatever for the book. And then he sent drawings back, just sketches.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were a little wrong. Nothing was terrible, but one, the harness was plastic and not leather. Hani has a leather harness. Mm. One, we were in front of a hole in the ground. It was in front of me horizontally, and that's not how it works. If she finds a hole in the ground, just like when I was describing where I thought we were on the stairs, and anytime she stops, she's still at my side, but I feel in front with my foot to see why she stopped. So she doesn't get in front of me. So that was wrong. And Mike described the drawings to me, and I just decided, well, I think we need to meet this guy.
Yeah.
So he lives in a farm 2 hours north of Minneapolis. So Hani and I took a bus to Minneapolis, and we met him in a coffee shop halfway between, and he drew a bunch of drawings there. He took some pictures. He watched us walk around. And I think when the book came out, everybody compliments the drawings and say how lifelike they are. And I think it was really important that we went up there and he saw us working, just physically doing the things we do. So,
because you do get a sense of the dog's purpose when the pictures of her walking down the street. You do know that she's in charge.
Yes.
You get that sense
that
she's leading and not following.
Yes,
and
definitely.
It's kind of an interesting, for those of us who don't even walk a dog, imagining trusting a dog.
Yeah.
That's got to be a leap of faith.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking my first dog, Dora, who I had here in Urbana. A lot of people listening will know Dora was a black lab.
Mm-hmm.
She retired in 2001 and lived with our friend Randy Cox in Urbana until she was 17. He took care of her. The day I met her, that was my first dog. And I don't think it was a leap of faith. It was so... exciting, intriguing. Like, you know, you held the harness and they said, okay, tell her to go forward. And she went forward and it was so wild. I mean, it was kind of like, whoa, you just hold on to this harness and she goes. And you kind of, I guess, to be honest, I think I trusted the school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I just, the
the trainer told me to go forward, and I did, and she went, and she stopped at a curb. And that, so it, it, I guess over time, I had to learn to trust her, but I've always trusted, I think that because this, you knew the school put a lot mm-hmm. into it and had a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking today with Beth Finke, who's here in town on a whirlwind promotional tour. She's just published a brand new book called Honey and Beth, Safe and Sound. It's about her, a little bit about her life and a lot about her companion dog, Honey, her guide dog. And it's written from the dog's point of view. It's all in Honey's voice. And she will be here at the Jane Addams Bookstore tomorrow, as well as at the Urbana Free Library tomorrow, promoting the book and signing copies. I invite you to call and ask your questions, talk about book publishing, children's books. You've got a question about Honey and what it's like having Honey in your life or a dog like Honey in your life. The number is 333-9455, or if you're calling toll-free, the number is 800-222-9455. And just a quick aside here, for those of you who are dog lovers and are familiar with some of the programs on Afternoon Magazine, this afternoon, dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel will join us on the Afternoon Magazine at 1 o'clock. And they are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana to answer your questions about dog care, dog behavior, and training. And they'll be here following the 1 o'clock news, a very different kind of dog, possibly. But today is a great day for dogs.
Yeah.
It's pretty much all about
yes.
the dogs for the yes. next couple of hours. So we invite your calls right now and invite you to tune in a little bit later. One of the things that I've always thought was very, very interesting, just the whole process of publishing, mm-hmm. back and forth, your concept and the publisher's idea and the editor's relationship, it's not unlike the relationship between you and Honey. I mean, you've got this editor who you trust with your idea.
Yes.
And they have to vet this for you. And that's got to be a relationship you have to build trust for, too, just to bring this book out.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. No, you're very insightful. Yes.
I do my best.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works.
Well, the manuscript, you know, I sent it mm-hmm. out. I only sent it to 30 publishers. I have a sister who's a teacher, mm-hmm. and she helped me narrow down. There are reference books that have lists and lists and lists of publishers and what they take. And so we narrowed mm-hmm. down children's books. Books about diversity or disability, teamwork, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. So of the 30, three publishers showed interest, which is great.
Yeah.
And so I worked with all three of them for a while. But you're right, it was this one. And this one is a pretty – it's Blue Marlin Publications. Mm-hmm. It's in Long Island. It's a small publisher, and she only puts out a few books a year. But just in talking to her on the phone and her – she was really honest – and she was, if I had a question, she was quick to respond. I think that the disadvantage to having a small publisher can be we're having a little trouble with the distribution mm-hmm. now because they don't have that big powerhouse back
right.
there. But it'll get to the stores. It's mm-hmm. just a little slower. The advantage is you get a lot of attention and mm-hmm. a lot of response. I did go out there and meet her in person, and that helped a lot. But she'd had a few books out. She had experience in education in children's mm-hmm. book publishing. So I did trust her when she'd come back and say, use a fancier word here, do this, that. The back and forth, you would think a children's is such a short book, but it did, from the minute she took it, I think it took about 6 months for us to go back and forth and get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Then the illustrator was chosen, and he was given 2 weeks for every illustration.
Wow.
So the book was really, I was done with my writing bit about a year and a half ago. And then it took him a year to do each painting. Mm-hmm. And each one is an oil painting. Mm-hmm. So once you realize that, and now I'm back on the, you know, Tony, I've met Tony, he's kind of working on his next book and
right.
will help me when I'm going up to Minneapolis. He'll join me there to try to promote it there. But now I'm back in the saddle promoting it. And my editor is helping a ton mm-hmm. with that.
And when the final did your husband help look at it and say, you know, this is you, this is it?
Yes. And he had to do that. And to be honest, on the front cover, I have my eyes closed.
Yes.
And that Mike did not like. Mm-hmm. He said, you don't close your eyes. You know, that it was kind of a funny, issue that way. And some of the drawings inside, I have my eyes closed. Well, I think in some of the photographs he took, I did have my eyes closed, uh-huh. My eyes are open. And I thought it was important for children to know mm-hmm. that even though I'm blind, my eyes are open.
Right.
And to kind of try to understand that concept. But that's a good – we went back and forth with the publisher and the illustrator, and it would take a really long time to redo the cover. And so we said, okay, my eyes are closed because I'm in such rapture and joy hugging my dog.
Hugging the dog, yes.
Yes.
In some correspondence you have with Harriet, you talked about two things that were kind of important on this little tour that you're doing through Champaign-Urbana and Chicago about the book and about some other things attached to the book. One is helping people understand about guide dogs, and the other issue that you mentioned was Braille literacy for children.
Yes.
And what are the plans for bringing this book out in Braille? Are there?
The book is out in Braille.
It is.
It's already out. It was important to me. When I got the contract with Blue Marlin, right away I said to them, I want this book to come out in Braille, and I want it to come out in Braille the very same day it comes out in print. Braille books are expensive, mm-hmm. and most books have to be very popular before they come out in Braille. So kids and adults who want to read and read a Braille version, or for that matter, a lot of audio versions, mm-hmm. we often have to wait until it gets popular enough or there's enough of a market for it. So I wanted it out in Braille. Blue Marlin has a policy of always donating a certain amount of money to an organization. So there's a portion of the proceeds from every print copy goes to an organization. So mm-hmm. she asked me which one would I like the money from Safe and Sound to go to. So I picked Seedlings, Braille Books for Children. It's mm-hmm. a small organization in Michigan. They produce books in Braille, and they're nonprofit. And so they accept donations to keep the costs low on the books. So the Braille book was actually two remarkable things about this. The Braille book was out before the print book was out.
There you go.
And it's $8, and the print copy is twice as much. That mm-hmm. kind of thing never happens. The Braille book has print on it, but no illustrations.
Oh, so they didn't?
They didn't, yeah.
They didn't imprint the illustrations.
And that was Seedling's choice, and I like it because the Braille book is for kids who are blind. It's mm-hmm. There are some books out that have illustrations, and it's kind of to teach sighted children what Braille is like. Mm-hmm. But my intention in this one was to get the blind kids to have a book when everybody mm-hmm. else had one. It's still interesting to look at. I brought one with me, and I'll have it with me at all these stops so you can see mm-hmm. the print right underneath the Braille to see how it corresponds.
Uh-huh. I was at I wish I could remember what library it was, but they had a set of children's books that were done in Braille where the illustrations, they told me to close my eyes and just run my hands over the page, and it was a little bit like touching a globe that had topography on it, relief
mm-hmm,
on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, just feel it and don't try to translate it for yourself. And after a bit, then she told me what I was touching, and I was like, well, that's interesting, but that's got to cost.
Yes.
A ton of
mm-hmm.
money.
It does, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the effort of Seedlings Braille Books for Children, it turns out, I mean, I studied this after we decided to have them be the place we donated to. Only 20% of kids today who are blind read Braille. And I researched why that is, and nobody can really say, so I'm coming up with my own little theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are so many books on tape now that kids who can't read print just listen to books. We use talking computers. I use a talking computer mm-hmm. to read and write. And also there are fewer and fewer teachers who teach Braille.
Huh.
And so the kids, and although they can get by listening to books like that and all, they will but it'll be very difficult to learn how to spell or how to use punctuation. Because if mm-hmm. you imagine, if all you're doing is listening to books,
right.
my spelling has gotten poor since I mm-hmm. haven't been able to read for 20 years. And so mm-hmm. if you're not reinforced, that isn't reinforced. Mm-hmm. And they don't even know, kids who don't read Braille don't know how to do paragraph breaks. Just imagine,
right.
you're not really reading.
Right.
Yeah. So it's important that these kids be encouraged to read Braille, and if there are more books available in Braille, mm-hmm. that might help.
Because just walking through our building, all the room signs are in Braille as well as in relief text.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to the bank, there's Braille on the drive-up.
Yeah, and which everybody asks about. I know the answer for that one. You know,
yeah, it's less expensive to just make one kind.
Exactly. They make one plate for all of them. So it's not that we're expecting blind people to be driving to the drive-up.
But it's a real concept.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if they're not being, if children are not being taught how to read this and they need it, this is going to be, that's going to be more handicapping
exactly.
in the long run.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a real difficult issue for some of these folks as they enter adulthood and try to move around.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got trickle-down ramifications that aren't necessarily good.
Yeah.
If I can understand, it's faster to get that Harry Potter to them, but it would have been better. I'm trying to envision 800 pages of Harry Potter as a Braille text.
Actually, that new Harry Potter book came out in Braille the same day it came out in print. They went to a great deal, and they had to keep it a big secret because it was ready the 2 days before or something. So all the people in Louisville, Kentucky, who were producing in Braille knew the end of the story.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
And they kept their mouths shut.
I guess so.
Because they can't read Braille?
I don't know.
Well, that'd be one way. Well, bless their hearts. Good for them.
Yeah.
We have another caller from Champaign on line number one. Hello.
Hello. I understand that you teach classes to adults in the Chicago area occasionally, and if you do not read Braille, how do you offer feedback on what they're writing, especially if there are numerous students in a class and you would have a lot of material to listen to?
Good question. I do teach a class for senior citizens about memoir. It's sponsored by the Mayor Daley's Department on Aging. So what we do in that class, I give an assignment every week. Everyone goes home and writes fewer than 500 words on that topic, and they come back, and every single person reads their story out loud, and we all critique it together.
Mm.
This kind of evolved. Some of the students have email, and if they have email, I welcome them to email me the story, and then I'll give them more critique that way. But these are people who want to write, for the most part, they just want to write their life stories down. So it's not so critical that we check all their grammar or all that. But, boy, it's a really terrific, wonderful gathering of senior citizens from all over Chicago. How we came up with the 500-word limit is, you know, when you get a group of 12 people together, there's always somebody that wants to go on and on and on and on about their fascinating vacation. And, you know, so I learned early we had to have a word limit. The word limit actually helped because if you give yourself a word limit, you work hard to find the exact precise word that will tell the story. So they had to work on that. The word limit also kept them under 5 minutes. I eventually got a timer, an old-fashioned oven timer, and I marked it with Braille, and I give them each 5 minutes. And when the ding goes off, they're done. So that way I didn't have to be the mean teacher to say, stop, stop, you're boring, stop. The ding goes off and go, okay. I have a Scrabble game that's in Braille, and it's really difficult to play Scrabble in Braille. So I took the tiles between A and whatever they are, P, and threw them in a bag. And now I send that around, and they all have to pick a tile, and whoever's A goes first and whoever's B goes second, because I found after a few classes they were all coming early, so they'd sit right next to the teacher, so they'd go first. So it's evolved into a pretty great class, and they all have to listen to each other. So in fact, it's been a sort of advantage that we do it that way. Everybody sits back and listens hard. I discourage them from printing their stories out and passing them around because I find then people read it and they don't listen. So that's my class.
Well, it sounds fun, though.
Oh, there's a waiting list. They had to have a lottery to get in this last time. So obviously seniors need to have their stories heard. I think really that's what's going on there, that they know that they can come every week and tell their story and somebody will listen.
Yeah. Well, I know just on the subject of storytelling, in conjunction with Ken Burns' documentary on World War II, many, many stations, including WYLL, are now even in the process yet of collecting stories.
Yes.
From veterans. And one of the most popular segments, I think, from people tell us during pledge drives is the This I Believe and the StoryCorps.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great interest suddenly bubbling up for actively collecting stories.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't know whether that's something new out there or whether it's always been there and it's just, you know, now a little more accessible.
I think it's accessible. It's being discovered, and with a big boom in memoirs. I mean, mm-hmm. so many memoirs have been coming out that I think
people realize their stories are worth telling.
And I wonder if that's part of it, because, you know, for a long time, I guess, if you go to a bookstore and you look at memoirs, you see, you know, presidents of the United States and prime ministers and people who've won Nobel Prizes, all of them very, very interesting, you know, lives of the saints, that kind of thing. And if, I wonder if people used to think that maybe my story isn't all that interesting. But when you start reading people's stories, they're not significantly different. Except the press corps wasn't there when they charged up the hill.
Sure.
Or something.
I mean, look, University of Illinois Press published Long Time No See, mm-hmm. story about a blind woman in Urbana. Mm-hmm. So it's
a great idea. Mm-hmm. And whatever you might think, anybody might think of Mayor Daley, I think they've done. that's one of the lovely things.
Yes, that's right. It's that one good thing he did.
Yeah, I think they've really done a pretty decent job of encouraging artistic expression.
Yes, that's right.
Among lots of people, not just people who can somehow create ginormous sculptures.
Yes, that's
right. In the middle of a square. But, you know, quiet stories like Honey and Beth and mm-hmm. Safe and Sound, where you say, well, there's a story there.
Yeah.
And it's will definitely intrigue a child. Because they're, you know, the pictures are good about showing how the children are drawn to the dog.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, often when I walk into a place, I hear, doggy, doggy, dog, dog, because mm-hmm. they're not used to seeing them in public places. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, how come that dog's here? There's all these questions. Mm-hmm. And that kind of encouraged me, too, to write it. Just mm-hmm. There's a lot of interest.
Is it, just out of curiosity, I can understand why you probably would not pair a child up with a guide dog, because mm-hmm. it would be too powerful an animal, and then that would be a difficult thing. But is there sufficient training out there for guide dogs that people with sight difficulties or blindness would be able to get a dog? Are there enough of them out there?
There are. There's a short waiting list. And I think in most schools you have to at least be 16. Mm-hmm. I think at the CNI maybe it's 18, but I'm not sure. It's not the power, it's just that there's a lot of the person has to take a lot of responsibility mm-hmm. for the dog. There's a lot we have to do to keep them trained and keep their training up and take care of them. And so it takes a certain kind of maturity. But most schools, there's the waiting list, but it's usually 2 or 3 months. It's not really that horrific. Now, if you insist on having a German Shepherd and it has to be a male, and, you know, you can insist on that, but then you have to be willing to wait a long time. Mm-hmm. With Dora was my first dog, and I think I signed up for her, and there was a 6-month waiting list, but then all of a sudden they called me and said somebody had canceled and could I come the next week? And so I went the next week. So that sort of thing happens mm-hmm. too. I looked this up before I came today, so let me. There are 1.7 million people in America who are visually impaired or who are legally blind, and 7,000 of us use guide dogs. And I thought if I were good at math, I'd figure that out. That is a really small percentage.
Right.
And that's a lot of people, when these kids see the dog and doggy, they've never seen a seeing eye dog before. Mm-hmm. We're kind of rare. And it's a lot of people who are visually impaired choose not to have a dog. I think they do understand the responsibility. Mm-hmm. Some of them have some sight and can get along better than I could with my cane. But
I would think that you'd need to be in a tough love household because it is your dog.
That's right. I mean, Mike takes her out for the last. She goes out after 8 p.m. every night, and he takes her out just as a safety issue. It's dark.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he's not allowed to ever feed her. He can play with her, but he can't feed her. I'm always the one that feeds her. I'm always the one, if we get treats, he'll buy her treats, and then he has to give them to me, and then mm-hmm. I have to give them to her. And it's hard. You know, he's the one that got it. Every once in a while when she does something terrific, well, she does something terrific every day, but mm-hmm. over the top, he said, I want to get her a steak. And I give him a dirty look and say, you know, but he did give Dora a steak after I went off to see Hani. I mean, to meet my new seeing eye dog. Mm-hmm. Dora stayed with Mike a few days before he took her over to Randy's, and he fed her a steak. So her retirement steak.
They went mm-hmm. out for a retirement dinner.
Yes.
Yeah. We have a caller on line number one from Champaign. Hello. Hello?
It's Elvis.
It's Elvis. No, it's an unpush button. Okay. Hello, Champagne. Hello? Hi.
I think you might have answered my question. You said there's 1.7 million blind people in the United States?
Yes. Well, I should say legally blind, and I even looked that up. You have to have 20/200 vision to be legally blind.
20/200 vision?
Or only see 20% of your field of vision. You know how there are some people who are blind who they can see the little pinhole in the middle of their eye, but if they can only see 20% of their range, they are legally blind.
Do you have any statistics on how that's broken down by age?
I don't, but I know where you can go. The American Federation of the Blind has a terrific website that has. That's where I go when I need this kind of information. So it's
What's that website?
It's AFB.
AFB.
B as in boy. So A as in Alfred. F as in Finky. B as in Beth. .org. It's really there's a lot. All the blind organizations have websites, but this one is my personal favorite.
So this is American Federation of the Blind.
Yep.
They'll have that information.
Yep.
What about our local area? Are there any like blind schools for the blind here?
There's a school for the blind in Jacksonville, Illinois, and that's for children. And then the only places I know of, a lot of the universities have special services for people with students with disabilities. And in fact, that's where I learned to use my first talking computer. Even though I wasn't a student, the University of Illinois let me go over to the rehab center and work with their talking computers as long as students weren't using it. So universities are a good place for reference. When I first lost my sight, I lived in Urbana, but I went up to Chicago for all my rehab and to learn how to read Braille and use a cane and all that.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
And thank you for calling. I had a question, and it just like, you know, the mental terrain derailed there.
Well, let me think. What can I tell you? I'm sure we've missed a major.
Oh, I know. Well, let's just do the easy thing.
Okay.
What do you have another project you'd like to do?
I have another project I've worked on, and I was glad the caller called about the senior citizen. I have written a book about the class I teach, but it's not very good. I have a manuscript. I didn't send it out to any. I sent it out to a friend who I trusted, and he wrote a critique for me. And so when I get done promoting this book, I'm going to go look at that manuscript again. And I figure, so then I'll have written a memoir for, I guess, average age people, and then a children's book, and then I'll have this book for senior citizens. Well, it's not. It's just going to be about that class and
about
the people
the
that come.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
For now, and I'm still write a lot of magazine articles. I have a lot of I did this on purpose, but I have a few articles coming out in Dog Fancy, the world's most widely read dog magazine, and The Bark,
who I
write for regularly. Yes, that's a very hip magazine out of
Berkeley,
California.
The
yes,
Berkeley
you
Bark.
Know, yeah,
okay.
The Berkeley Bark. I have a couple articles coming out soon for them, so that when it says by Beth Finke, and then there's a little thing saying Beth's new book, Honey and Beth, Safe and Sound, blah blah blah. So, one of those, Dog Fancy is about Austin and how dog-friendly Austin, Texas is, because I was there for 3 days, and they've started doing these, kind of like what you see in airline magazines, like 3 days in Chicago.
Now it's
3 days with your dog in blah. So that's the one there. So that'll be a lot of fun when that kind of stuff goes up. So I have ongoing, I'm working on articles and things like that.
So when you travel, though, Honey doesn't get a chance to really do much dog stuff.
Austin's incredible. It's so dog friendly. Mm-hmm. So she goes with me wherever I go, but it was interesting. Everywhere we went, she wasn't the only dog. You know, like we were sitting out at patios having, you know, our dinner, and there are always a lot of dogs around there. So she got to enjoy, you know, looking at the other dogs.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of dog parks there. And there's dog park in Champaign.
There is.
Yep. And she can go, but I need to have a sighted person with me to appreciate that. But yeah, she's, like I say, workaholic.
Workaholic.
Mm-hmm.
Very dedicated.
Yes.
Yes.
But she enjoys her fun, trust me. So,
along those lines, I was sort of interested. I read your both of your books and some things about you, and you've done some traveling. Is it a quirky experience because you've been sighted and now you're not sighted, and there's obviously a difference. Has it been just all over the place, wild to adjust to people traveling with you?
Yes. You mean like how what attention we get?
The attention, are there special challenges in special places that make it just sense of humor required?
Yeah. Actually, I think the biggest challenge is to go on just a vacation that other people will go on. Like if Mike and me and Hani want to go on a vacation, let's say we want to go to Montreal. Okay, so we go to Montreal and we're there. Well, all the guidebooks are in print. You know that part when you go with a special friend to a trip and you're kind of looking over where you're going to do or what you're going to do, or you're just resting for a while and reading or just, I can't do that because there's not stuff in print. And so I'm always, I want to go. You know, let's do something. I want to be out there and doing things. And so there's not much chance to just hang out.
Mm-hmm.
I also used to love people watching, and that's part of the fun of going to a foreign country.
Right.
If you can't speak the language, you just observe what people are doing. Mike and I went to Italy with some friends, and I had a nice time. The food's great. Weather's great. Wine is great. But there was a lot. I burst into tears at one point because I missed that part of it where you're just sitting back. And while Mike is sitting back doing that, he doesn't always want me to be talking. And you might have noticed, I have a tendency to talk a lot.
It's okay.
Okay. It works for radio.
It does. Filling in the places where the host's question kind of went on the derail.
I thought of something else I have to plug. I have a blog.
Oh, good.
I have joined the 21st century.
There you go.
And
you didn't get dragged kicking and screaming into it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, I did. Oh, I wanted to. I got dragged kicking and screaming into it because I write already. I mean, I write some things for Chicago Public Radio, essays. Every once in a while I get an essay in National Public Radio. I think, why would I just write this stuff and just put it out there for free?
Mm-hmm.
And also, who cares about my, you know, what I think about whatever? But when the book was coming out, the publisher encouraged me to blog, and here's the thing that put me over. I'm probably preaching to the choir out there, but if you Google Guide Dog Chicago something, maybe number 7 will be my blog.
Oh.
And so you know how we all kind of goof around on, you know, we look for something, but then we go down the list. Oh, look at that. There's somebody with a guide dog in Chicago. Maybe I'll click on that. Then they click on that. And then, of course, word gets out that there's a children's book about, you know, it's promotional, but you know what? I really enjoy it. I like it more than I thought I would.
Well,
there you go. Blogged about, if you go to my website, which is bethfinke.com, and hit the blog, there's a story about me taking the train. There's already a blog about my coming to Urbana. It's been more fun. I have a part-time job for Easter Seals headquarters in Chicago. I was an intern. I had a 9-month internship. They got a special grant to help people with disabilities use computers. And I already use a computer, but I knew I'd learn more. I learned how to do web content management. And at the end of that, I didn't. I did learn how to do it. But at the end of that, they decided I wouldn't be a good web content manager. But they wondered if I might want to stay on. So I work part-time, and I moderate their blog. They have a blog about autism. And so I learned how to use the tools. And because I did the internship, I had more confidence. I thought, well, I can learn these new skills. And so I learned it at my job, and then so that's how I'm able to do it. But not many blind people blog. It's tricky to use your talking computer and get everything in the right spot. But
yeah, I would imagine that it's tough enough for some of us to find the on switch, if you know what I mean. Trying to find the on switch and learn to use it in a different way.
Yeah, and get it in the right, you know, so often I put the blog in the part where I'm supposed to put the title, but I'm catching on. Mm-hmm. And there's a young intern working at Blue Marlin Publications, and she puts up all the pictures. I mean, I send her pictures and say, pick one and put it up. So
okay, that makes sense.
It's fun.
Yeah. I want to remind our audience, folks who are listening today, that you will be able to meet Beth and Hani tomorrow. Either at the Urbana Free Library in downtown Urbana between 11 and 11:45, or at the Jane Addams Bookstore downtown in Champaign at 208 North Neal from 2 to 4, where Beth and Hani will be signing copies of Safe and Sound, and rumor has it there will be cookies. there'll be food.
Yes, and there aren't any books at Urbana Free Library, so would love for you to come. I'm going to talk to the kids there, but if you want a book, come to there and then come and see us at Jane Addams.
And you have an opportunity. I think it's a great opportunity for children to interact with people that they may be shy of.
Yes.
And I think one of the best things that ever happened to my girls, one of whom was very shy herself, was she had the opportunity at the preschool there was, in the same building that the Montessori school was in, there were children who were very profoundly developmentally handicapped. And the best part about that is those little ones in the Montessori school are probably less timid around people who are not quite like them, no matter what that not like me is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's great that you are willing to talk to children.
Oh, they're fine. Well, I'd only talk for about 3 minutes.
And then they're all over you.
No, then I do it. The question and answer part is always the most fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we still have time. One other thing about the book, I wrote it about seeing eye dogs, but I was delighted. One of the first reviews that came in from Donna Seaman at American Library Association. Mm-hmm. And I really hadn't intended to do this, but I am so thrilled that she said, it's not just a book about a seeing eye dog, but it's a book about a woman who is blind but has a very fun, interesting, fulfilling life.
Yes.
And that, it's terrific because I didn't bang people over the head with that, but I just was writing about where Hani takes me.
Right.
And in that, I think children will look at that. She does this. She does that. You know, those of us with disabilities aren't like everybody else, but there is that difference. I mean, it's not, but we can have very interesting, happy lives. And I sure do.
Make great friends.
Yes, definitely.
I want to thank you for coming and talking with us today. We are, I let us yak too long. We're good, Jason says, in sign language. So I want to thank our guest, Beth Finke, and her companion, who's laid quietly underneath the table here, Hani.
Yes.
Invite you to meet her at Jane Addams tomorrow or at the Urbana Free Library. And we're closing out the show.